Good morning, this is Tom Winifrith with my weekly postcard on the 25th of October. It's a tale of two prime ministers, Blair and Cameron. Before that, I should just say how proud I am of my daughter. Now just a teenager, she tells me that she was berated by the father of one of her school friends. Thanks to her rich mother, she attends a very posh school in London, which costs an arm and a leg. And the father of her school friend works as some sort of economist pushing the global warming agenda. Well, that tells you how much money some in the middle classes are making from pushing what is now clearly a myth. My daughter stood up to him as he berated her for not believing in man-made climate change. My daughter, of course, is this on the side of the red car steel workers. They're going to lose their jobs because British electricity is just too expensive. The reason for that is that consumers of electricity have to pay huge subsidies for the pointless bird-killing machines and fish-killing machines like the Swansea Bay tidal barrage and the wind turbines on Samantha Cameron's father's massive estates. We have to subsidise these things through our power bills. It is very good news for middle-class people in London who, by pushing bogus science, can afford to send their kids to posh public schools. It is bad news for the folks in Redcar. I am delighted that my daughter is on the side of right. A few years ago, I remember her lecturing me about the little polar bears, blah-de-blah-de-blah. But these days, my daughter has turned into a wonderful young libertarian, fantastic on both social issues and also on economic issues, and I couldn't be more proud of the way that she has developed. Now to two people I'm rather less proud of, a tale of two prime ministers. We start with David Cameron, and let's forget about sucking up to the Chinese and ignoring their human rights abuses. It's not what I bash him on today. Really, it's a failure of our society. It's the idea that you and I have to get David Cameron to stop our kids being fat. Yeah, I'm talking about the sugar tax. Look, it's pretty simple out here. If you don't want your kids to grow up fat, you don't feed them junk food. It's not that hard. You avoid certain foods. You don't give them chocolate-coated Cheerios for breakfast. You give them porridge. You don't take them out and give them popcorn, pizza, and other junk food. You give them a healthy, balanced diet. It's actually cheaper to give your kids such a diet. Porridge is a lot cheaper, or basic oats is a lot cheaper than chocolate-coated Cheerios. And see, it's not a matter of people not being able to afford to feed their kids properly. It's a matter of individual parental choice. Yet, those on the left in Britain, Jamie Oliver and others, the bien pensant, are suggesting the way to tackle childhood obesity is via a sugar tax. And David Cameron seems to be going along with this crackpot agenda. The idea that the state has to help you to bring your kids up better. Just think about it. Take the natural extension. Soon we're going to be having everyone taken away from their parents at 5 weeks and put into state-funded nurseries so that they're told to think correctly. It is crackers. The state does not need to waste its time and effort forcing you to bring your kids up properly. It's your choice. If you want to feed your kids Cheerios, chocolate Cheerios, and a diet of junk food and watch them grow up fat, well, that's fine. That's your covenant you make with your kids. I'm not going to say that you're a bad parent. You're just choosing to have fat kids. It's your call. Of course, a sugar tax would be a regressive tax. That is the other thing that is wrong about it. Middle-class people tend to have thinner kids because they do opt to give their kids porridge rather than chocolate Cheerios. Perhaps they encourage them to take more exercise. So middle-class people, A, would not be affected directly by the sugar tax, and B, would be more likely to switch their behavioural patterns. The sugar tax will be one which overwhelmingly hits the poor. It is a regressive tax. It is like the plastic bag tax, which is a regressive tax. Its proportionate effect is to hit the poor more. I hate to say it, but taxes on cigarettes are a regressive tax. Since 30 years ago, when I lived in America, or when I was in America, cigarettes were incredibly cheap. They're now very expensive in certain places like New York because of the huge taxes imposed by the governor of New York and the mayor of the city in order to discourage smoking. It may have had some effect on smoking, but generally, if you mix in middle-class circles in New York now, no one smokes. If you mix amongst the working class, then more people smoke. And I think there was some data saying that amongst the poorest quarter of New York, something like 25 or 30% of their income now is spent on cigarettes if they are a smoker. It is a highly regressive tax. I'm not arguing for a change in the tax laws, although I have pointed out before that the more you tax cigarettes, the more crime you get. It's quasi-prohibition. When you tax cigarettes at the levels we do now in Britain, so that a pack of cigarettes now costs almost 10 quid, it is no surprise that something like 30% of the fags smoked in Britain today are in fact smuggled. They are brought to this country by criminals and distributed by people who are prepared to break the law because they know they can knock them out at 5 or 6 quid a packet. I digress. The sugar tax is a pointless exercise. People have it within their own power to make sure their kids aren't fat, but it will be another regressive tax, something that hits the poor more than the middle class and the wealthy. That is something which I don't want. I don't believe in taxes that punish poor people. And also, I believe that parents have the right to feed their kids what they want. That's one Prime Minister, his folly. The other Prime Minister committed a greater folly, that is Tony Blair, who has this week, in a PR exercise, apologised for the Iraq war. He's admitted that it was a mistake. He has admitted that it has in part led to the growth of ISIS. Well, I should cocoa, of course it has. We created a power vacuum in an artificial and inherently unstable country. Iraq was not a really proper country. It's one that we created post-World War I. We tried to impose a monarchy. We've fiddled around at the edges there, but it's not one homogeneous country. There are the divisions between the Marsh Arabs in the south, a small people, much smaller since Saddam Hussein killed many of them, the Kurds in the north, the Sunnis, the Shiites. It is not one stable country. Blair did, via his illegal war, help fuel the growth of ISIS. Also, of course, we caused enormous resentment there by our meddling. That is the idea of blowback, which Ron Paul has talked about for so many years. If you intervene in the country, eventually it will come back and bite you on the bum. Blair, in his PR exercise, blames faulty intelligence. Of course, we know that that is yet another lie from the man. The reason he has given this interview and tried to show some contrition is that earlier in the week, a memo emerged which showed that a year before the actual war, Blair was plotting with the neocons in power in the White House to invade Iraq. In other words, everything that he said at the time was a pretext. He had agreed to this illegal war beforehand. That puts him firmly in the dock, or it would in a just world, for war crimes. What we see this weekend is the PR spin, him saying, sorry, I wouldn't have done it differently now. Him trying to blame faulty intelligence. It was not faulty intelligence, Mr. Blair. You wanted a war a year beforehand and you fabricated the evidence. There were no weapons of mass destruction, which you claimed. You got that off the internet. You ignored the intelligence which told you there was no weapons of mass destruction. You made up your own evidence. At the time, I remember thinking, I can't believe that a Prime Minister would stand up in the House of Commons and tell a blatant lie. So I guess there must be weapons of mass destruction. And I think many of us felt the same way. But of course, there were no weapons of mass destruction. It was a fiction on the part of Blair and Campbell. It was a fiction exposed by poor David Kelly, the scientist who met an unusual death in the Oxfordshire woods as a result of him exposing this for the lie that it was. If we were a civilized society and a fair society, There is no doubt that Mr. Blair would by now be on trial for war crimes. We would be forcing him to go to The Hague and stand trial. Now, no doubt Mr. Blair would come up with some very clever defence. He might get the Wicked Witch to defend him in this trial, but he should stand trial. Instead, we have the farce of the Chilcot Inquiry, which after 6 years has yet to publish its findings. But thanks to a free press, we do now know that Blair wanted a war and had agreed to a war a year before the actual war. That is pretty slam dunk evidence in my book. I say that as a rational, non-Muslim thinking human being. I wonder how many of the poor Muslims who, for reasons which we can go into another day, find themselves facing some degree of economic poverty in this country, I'm sure feel that we have an anti-Muslim mood, and again we can discuss this another day, but certainly feel marginalised. I wonder how they feel about it. There is a wider Muslim world where there is certainly some pretty hostile feeling towards the West. I have argued time and time again that the answer to this is not to go and bomb the shit out of them, which seems to be the current default policy of our leaders across the political spectrum, but just to show that we are somehow better than the barbaric folk of ISIL. And the way that we should show that we are better than ISIL is by saying, yes, we have made mistakes, and those who are responsible for those mistakes will face justice. The only way that we can send a clear message out to the Muslim world is that we are genuinely sorry for the mistake of invading Iraq, something we shouldn't have done, I think something it's now widely recognised we shouldn't have done, is by saying that we are prepared to allow, in fact we would encourage, the idea that Tony Blair and the others in the cabinet who authorised this nonsense, people like Jack Straw, should go to The Hague and should face a trial. It's possible they'll be found not guilty. I think that email from Blair to the neocons makes it rather unlikely. But we should show that we operate on a better, a fairer moral compass than ISIL. If they are found guilty, they have to serve the time. And that is only fair. We believe in justice, don't we? We believe in openness. We believe in transparency. We believe that if people make mistakes, they should be punished for them in a fair and humane way. The only way forward now is for Chilcot to be published immediately, for Blair to stop using whatever techniques he can to delay its publication, and if there is any evidence at all, and I think we now know there's a lot of evidence, that Blair, Straw et al. Committed war crimes, for them to be shipped off to The Hague and for us to show that we adhere to higher standards than ISIL. Maybe the Wicked Witch could just be put in the dock as well, rather than be made as a defendant. I'm sure we can pick her up for something. I shall be back with another weekly postcard in a week's time. I hope you're having a good weekend. And remember, something about the clocks going back or forwards. So I don't know what time of the day this is and whether you're all up yet. But I'll be back in 7 days. Speak to you then.